Good evening. It is midnight, Wednesday, July 28th. My name is Steve Cato, and I am here at Kachungus Radio with none other than Nicholas Miller. How are you?
Hey, Steve. I'm just trying to shake the heat from today. I had like a thin layer of sweat on me all day, and now it's finally peeling.
Were you outside?
No, but you know, my atelier in Chinatown,
just across
the street, is not. The air has not been conditioned.
No, it would be very hard to condition that air. It has basically open windows, unclosable windows.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much have to like fully imprison air in order to condition it, and I'm against that. I'm about
freedom
of air.
abolition and decarceralized air.
Yeah. So, you know, this political stance of mine and the desire to be cool don't always cohere.
It's not always cool to be cool.
No, it's not. It's not. I feel like the look for an artist in LA is to be sweaty. You know, to show up to the opening at like 8, like as if you've been in your studio all day, hair tousled, kind of gross looking. That seems like the LA look, right?
I feel like it's like sunglasses and like open shirt.
With a t-shirt underneath or just bare chested?
Bare chest.
I guess this is
a great tan.
Yeah, I mean, we are.
Moroccan leatherwork sort of slip-on loafer sandal hybrid, you know, something like that.
This is a very gendered read of opening fashion, but Steve and I do dress like men for all of our listeners out there.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty standard men, I'm afraid.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid of nothing. I have nothing to fear. You know, I am what I am. What can I say? I was having a conversation with a friend of mine today who was thinking about wearing wigs more often.
Okay.
Just to have fun. And they were like, I don't want this to read as some sort of like I'm playing with gender thing. And I think the funny part was that like, at least certainly here in this culture, like the gender coding is so rigid that even the idea that you want to like have fun by dressing up is itself like a gendered, you know, like not gendered male. So it's like automatically puts you in the role of doing some sort of like playful gender stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When you aren't necessarily, you know, or when this person's not like, oh, I am doing a complicated gender or whatever. That's not how they think about it at all.
I see. They're just positive.
What would be fun? Yeah.
I guess the sad case here is that what is considered neutral is really traditionally menswear. Like blue jean and t-shirt. Yeah.
Stay in your lane kind of thing. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like, yeah, the neutral move would be to dress like a quote unquote dude.
Right.
And I mean, it extends across other things too, right? Like pay parity would mean like paying women the same that you pay men, not like, you know, not the other way around at all in the imagination.
Sure. You know, I feel like with the climate here, the neutral should be like sundresses.
Moo-moo. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be,
moo-moo.
It's like, if you don't want to think about it, you're going out in the summer, wear a sundress.
Just loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
Free as a bird. I mean, in life in general, I think that's probably the way it should be. Right?
I agree.
And it's interesting, you know, I think often about the dress uniforms on Star Trek The Next Generation, which are like these really long dress-like robe coats, right?
Oh, for the ceremonial garb?
Yeah, the dress uniform. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So they're wearing their normal sort of uniform, and then like it's like, you know, Deanna Troi's mom is getting married. What's everyone wearing? And everyone shows up wearing their like
Knights long of the Templar.
they're sort of like, yeah, I get what's the tunics? Is that what those are called? But yeah. They're kind of just like, they kind of just look like things that like Hillary Clinton wore.
Yeah.
You know, like the sort of like white lady power suit kind of thing, but it's like, you know, Picard and Worf.
She had some pretty great collars during that campaign for president.
It's a shame she was not cooler politically.
That's true.
Because if you coupled those collars with like being a Maoist, for example, I think you'd really be on. You know, if she was like, she got up there and she was like, "Burn the landlords," you know, like you would be like, "Wow, that outfit really does. That outfit's really popping." Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, she was very pro landlord. That's my understanding.
Yeah. This is the collar of a hawk.
Yeah, I'm not a political wonk. I don't know if my appraisal of her as pro landlord is accurate, but that's certainly the. You know what this reminds me of? Have you seen this? It started making the rounds again, but it's from 2018. It's this video online where someone goes through all of the Mario Kart characters and just says what their political alignments are.
Okay. What is princess?
Monarchist.
Oh, yeah, well, of course.
And you know, of course, Bowser is fash. But then, like, he comes to Toadette, and he's like, "Toadette, Black Bloc Antifa." We don't know much about Toadette, but she has that kind of energy. And it's just like, what? You know, like... Right.
What about the little dinosaur, Yoshi?
Yoshi, Marxist.
Why?
None of it makes sense, dude. I mean, there are no political, like that's the joke, right? Is like there is no such thing as political, you know, like, I mean, I guess obviously, yeah, like, you know, I guess there's suggestions that like Bowser is authoritarian maybe in some sense. Right. And obviously Princess Peach is like a monarchist.
Right.
Mario is
Italian.
is like clearly a working man.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But Wario is clearly libertarian. But other than these broad sort of like gestures, you know, we have a hard time you know, like how do you understand what toads or the other funny one was like there's all these like baby characters, you know, baby Mario, whatever, that you can play, and he was just like, this entire row of baby characters are all hyper nationalists at the first stage of political development, which is also really funny. Anyway, that's just what our earlier conversation reminded me of.
Wouldn't it be amazing if the internet actually recognized and rewarded the people that you know have these successful contributions? Like, you know, you go to a party in the Hollywood Hills and you're like, "Hey, whose house is this?" And like, "Oh, it's the guy who did that video of all of the Mario Kart characters." Oh yeah, I mean he deserved this. Yeah, great, hats off.
I think to some extent I think that is the case, you know. Like, no, I'm not joking. I mean, I think that guy does actually make a lot of video content, for example.
Yeah,
and I think people with successful social media channels can like, you know, point to that and say like, "Look, I made this," and then people, and like, and this many people like what I'm doing. So that people are like, "Oh yeah, I'll let you come up with ideas for this, because you seem like the kind of person that other people are listening to, you know, your ideas are clearly good ideas," is what the advertisers, people at the creative agencies think, you know? I mean, so those are pretty decent paying jobs. I mean, it's not like, hasn't been long enough that they get the place in the Hollywood Hills.
Sure.
But, you know, I think it's only, you know, I think in a decade or so, someone will have, you know, done a viral meet. It's a shame that it's not just one thing. And might I add as well, that complaint you just leveled is actually like you know, the main sort of shill point for NFTs, where they're like, wouldn't it be great if the person who did the dancing baby could make all the money from dancing baby? Well, now you can buy a dancing baby.
Yeah.
And you can trade the original right. dancing baby meme with your friends.
Support local artists.
Yeah. By funding their NFTs. So, I mean, it's funny that you sort of naively recreated the like false selling point for NFTs just like intuitively.
It's a real problem, guys.
Yeah, listen, we need to solve this problem now.
You'll never
cancer
you'll,
can wait.
You'll never look at Luigi again. Don't you understand?
Yeah, Luigi was what was the line of Luigi? Luigi was like the technocrat Republican concerned about the debt to GDP ratio.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll never choose that character again.
I'm
unless you live in the Bay Area.
there are characters more aligned with the Bay Area. There's like, the metal Mario would be, like thinks that, the blockchain will get you to Mars.
Okay. I guess I tapped out of Mario Kart. With Nintendo 64, I don't know half of these characters. There weren't as many then.
I think it's also from later Mario games, right? Like there would be like a subsequent Mario sequel, and then they would add like new material to it. And then the canon expands.
Mm-hmm.
The Mario Kart canon is queered, if you will, by the addition of different elements. Yeah.
Okay.
Boy.
We're putting you guys on here.
That's enough of this. Yeah, we actually do run a radio show called The Talking Show, and we do actually have talking lined up for you. The talking lined up for you is, I think, really gratifying this week, and I'm going to just let it go without much setup, because I think that's how it works best. And then we'll meet you here when everyone's finished. So please welcome Coyle and Sharp.
We'd like a person from a foreign land to see this and give us an objective reaction. Would you come with us at this time to the auditorium? You won't obligate yourself for more than an...
Is this just a look?
No. That's right. A look. Bear in mind, animals of all sorts will be coming at you. Huge birds, eagles, condors, reptiles, baboons, hyenas, this sort of thing.
I don't know whether my insurance policy covers such acts where I put myself in danger, such as this might be.
There's a moat surrounding the floor of the auditorium. It's filled with fish of all variety, including sharks. You will be in this moat with the sharks, but you will have some sort of band around your arm which signifies that you're a non-combatant, a million and a humanist spectator.
I don't know. It's quite horrific. I'm amazed at all this. Just swimming in the water and sort of blood, the water tainted with blood. And when does one stop? I mean, say you've killed one animal. Are you regarded as a hero? Then you hauled out? Or do you carry on killing as many as you can, sort of losing arms and legs left, right, and center? I don't know.
What about killing animals? What about the individuals who manage to, or if a group of individuals manage to trap one animal and start strangling it?
Well, I think you're trying to make me sick, actually. I feel sick now.
Why are you feeling sick?
Well, I'm just abhorred by the whole idea.
You're what?
Abhorred.
You really have taken a stand against this. Yes. We just want to put you in one ritual combat.
No, I won't.
With four animals, a snake, one leopard, and piranha fish
around you. I would be subjecting my life. I am young, and I've just qualified at home as a lawyer, and I've come here for a few months' holiday to enjoy myself. And if something happened to me now, my whole life would be ruined, and I don't know.
Really?
Seriously. I can't see... if you wish yourself to be maimed, you can do it another way. Get a chopper and chop one finger off at a time or something like that.
Have you ever killed a rabbit?
I have killed a rabbit, yes.
Have you enjoyed it?
I know. I feel absolutely horrible.
Have you ever killed a turtle?
A turtle? No, I haven't.
An ant? Insect.
I've killed... you kill flies and things like that, surely.
Size excuses you morally.
When it comes to
killing zebras.
You say a size, I'm afraid of something. I'd kill only small things because they can't do it to me. No, I should.
Have you ever killed a person?
Of course I've never killed a person.
But you would enjoy killing a person.
Oh, don't talk absolute rubbish, honestly.
We have bylaws in our organization which allow us to kill other members.
People that you've spoken to 15 or 20 minutes earlier.
I've never had such rot in my life. What do you want to kill people for? What do you achieve?
No, you would want to kill a person.
I wouldn't, no.
You mean to say that if you could come to one of the rituals and slay some animals and maybe...
Why take away a person's life from them?
Isn't there a certain amount of enjoyment?
No, absolutely none whatsoever.
In a ritual environment?
No. Why didn't you...
Why are you killing the animal? A bird coming down on you.
Oh. Snakes around your legs. Lizards.
Struggle. Yeah. Excitement. Challenge.
You're trying to impress me now, and you're trying to frighten me. That's what
no,
you're doing.
Yes, you know. We're trying to let you say, I can handle those animals.
No.
I can handle the people with spears. I can do that.
After people and animals are slain right there, we have huge bonfires. We roast the meat, the carcasses. Oftentimes it's the members. Sometimes it's the animals. Animals and the fish, and then we consume them, and you could eat this also.
It's an intellectual basis to all of this.
I don't see that's very exciting, eating the fish. It just sounds...
What about the people? What about your fellow members?
Intellectual basis.
Well, what is the point? I mean, what pleasure do you get in eating a person, really? What do you get from it?
You say, oh, lovely, or something, or
I am eating a human being, someone else's body, how marvelous I must be, surely... You're extroverts, aren't you? You're just trying to show people, or try to show people. You're better. You are suffering from an inferiority complex.
Because we eat people and animals.
Sure,
we get frenzied once the ritual starts, and we attack each other.
Then, animals. Then you see, you're not. You, it's not you. You're not responsible for what you're doing. You've got some false courage, some courage that's built up inside you in the frenzy of it. You can't control yourself.
Have you ever eaten chicken?
Yes.
Then what is the difference between eating chicken and, let's say, eating a giraffe? None, right? And then taking one step further?
No, I have
not. You have answered my question.
Just let me answer the question first. A chicken is a domesticated animal. I would say... If I was taking to an extreme, I would eat a camel. If I was very hungry, eat a camel or a giraffe.
Would you, if we killed a person now and consumed the person in front of you, not in a ritual environment, would you then join us?
I wouldn't let you. I would attempt to stop you from killing someone.
For ritual purposes?
A killing is a killing, isn't it? Someone is dying, and you have got malice aforethought. If you've got malice aforethought and you kill someone, you deserve to go to the electric chair.
Let's do it right now.
I should run like hell. You know, I'd be an accessory before the fact to murder. You realize
murder?
That, don't you?
Well, what do you think of the members of our group? I mean, as a group of honest citizens in our country.
Are you two members?
Yes, we are. What's wrong?
I'm not coming down there now.
No, you agreed. No, you agreed earlier to come.
Yeah, I know, but now I'm afraid I didn't trust you anymore.
Why?
Because...
In what sense?
Well, you
feel free to say anything.
You must be mental. I should have thought you needed some sort of medical attention.
Could we explain one thing?
Yes.
There are no animals.
No. What are you saying now?
There's no people struggling with animals.
No.
This is all in humor.
Did you have that picture?
I thought you must be completely dotty. I nearly felt like running away just then.
Would you go along with the idea of using germs and bacteria as gifts?
Definitely not.
Why is that?
Well, I just don't think it's right in this American way of living, that's all.
Well, a pet store here in the area has been working for about 3.5 years on a process to actually domesticate germs. Would you have these germs in your home?
Definitely not. I feel that it will contact some sort of sickness in time to come.
Would you be willing to take a small packet of germs with yourself today for a brief period, just for a 5-day period, and see whether you can regard the germs as pets?
No, I wouldn't. I think everybody has a certain amount of germs on them at all times.
Right. And wouldn't it be safer if you knew, wouldn't you feel more comfortable if you knew they were domesticated germs?
Right.
I don't know. I can't answer that because I don't know.
Would you take just one packet at this time and let us explain? The packet consists of a parlemail of germs, a parlemail... In scientific terminology, means a limited amount of germs. A larger colony of germs would involve millions. We're asking you to take just a parcel of mail, which is 600,000, for a five-day period. Then we want to ask you whether you've been happy with the germs.
Well, first of all, I don't have the time. I'm a very busy man, and I do a lot of traveling. It's number one. I'm up here on a visit right now. And secondly, if I did anything like this, it would have to be under my doctor's care.
Well, couldn't you, you say you do a lot of traveling, couldn't you, while you're traveling, distribute, act as a distributor, a wholesale outlet for germs?
Why, would you pay me for this?
Yes. Certainly.
If you could make money, would you sell germs?
If there was money in it and there was no danger to anybody else, I possibly would try to. I don't know if I could.
Would you rather be on the wholesale or retail end of the germ distribution?
I would definitely want to be under the wholesale end of it.
Doing what with the germs?
A wholesale distribution. As you said, use them for household pets.
I have the school principal with me today, two of his students, and we've just stopped a young lady. Your name, please?
Jane Kelly.
Jane, do you work here in the city?
Yes, on and off.
Okay, Jane, I'd like you to meet the principal of this private school, Mr. Yahold Ryan. Mr. Ryan, this is Jane Kelly.
Very glad to meet you, Miss Kelly.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Ryan, would you explain exactly what happened, what all this controversy is about?
I have taken these two boys out with me, and I brought them up to an area, actually outside a community of about 200,000 people. 175,000, in fact. We then sent the boys down into the community and had them ring two doorbells, claiming that they were lost. People took them into the home and then allowed them to stay over during the night. After the very hospitable peoples went to sleep, the boys got up, they went downstairs into the two respective homes, into the living rooms, and destroyed items that were possessed by these families that had given them hospitality. Would you instantly say this is wrong?
Instantly, I would say, you're a nut. And this idea is nuts, because I don't think that any child, no matter how much of getting back at something or growing up and having some sort of a, you know.
Well, let's see what the boys... It does. It certainly is a standard reaction. Let's see what the reaction was. Now, these are the two young boys that went down with Mr. Ryan. Your name, son?
I'm Ron.
Ron, how old are you?
I'm 14.
And the other fellow?
Andy.
Andy, and your age?
10.
Let's get back to Ron. Ron, what happened when you got into the home?
Didn't mention anything that occurred.
Well, I went into the home, and the people, they let me in, and they fed me a bowl of soup and some crackers. And then they asked about my parents, and I made up some fishy story about my parents. And then they put me to bed around midnight when I was sure that they were asleep. I could hear their snores. I went downstairs and I ruined a few expensive paintings. I smashed furniture and I ripped upholstery. Burnt drapes, broke windows, that type of thing.
What was the reaction of the people inside the house when they came down and saw what you had done?
It was a man and wife. The wife fainted, and the man called the police. Of course, I left.
Did you enjoy your experience?
Yes, I did.
And that's what I want to get from the other little fellow here. You're Andy, is that right?
Uh-huh.
Andy, how did you feel after your destructive soiree was over?
I more or less enjoyed it, except I had to run out to the tent rather fast.
You had to run back to the tent where Mr. Ryan was?
Uh-huh.
And would you do it even if you hadn't had adult permission from your school principal?
If I had the materials, I would.
Ronnie?
Yes, it isn't exactly out of revenge. This is the case with practically every kid.
Right.
Exactly.
Now,
that's
I
the purpose
accept
of
that.
The plan. That's exactly
well,
the
they
purpose.
Haven't gotten anything happened against these kids, so they're perfectly nice little kids.
But
and you say
can't.
Go in and get back at somebody who didn't do anything to them.
This is preparing them essentially to be offensive beings.
You're building these kids up into something before they even hit what is a normal sort
Make
of growing
them mean
up.
Now. Right. Make them mean now and prepare them for the world. Bring out the meanness in them and solidify it. Is that wrong?
Both these kids look like cute little guys who might grow up to be pretty nice kids, but boy.
Do you have an apartment here in the city?
Yes.
Would you allow these two young fellows, sure. Would you allow them to stay at your home?
I would take in anybody because I like people. But I would not take these two boys into my home now because I know the background and what this guy has said.
What would they do?
You may tell them that it's all right for them to burn up my clothes, and you may tell them it's okay for them to steal or take my furniture. What kind of chance am I taking that they don't rip up my grandmother's rocker that is over 150 years old?
Do you want to help these boys? Let them, if you do.
Oh, she's already agreed. You did agree.
No, I said that if they came to my door, I would most likely take them in, but I would not take them in now, knowing what's behind all this.
Will you let them destroy your home?
I don't want them in my house.
Boys, would you like to go into this lady's home?
Yes.
Andy?
Yes.
And will you definitely... What?
Why would you like to come into my house?
Would you get into the closets and burn her clothing if you had an opportunity to?
I'd get matches, light it, and throw them in.
That's what I thought. Well, you're not gonna.
Can we tell you something? This gentleman here is not a principal of a boys' school.
We actually don't advocate this program.
Uh-huh.
This is all in humor.
These are two friends of ours.
You are really... I thought, okay, boy, I'm really going to be the social worker of the week.
Mel? Are you still sleeping? Still sleeping?
Yeah, I'm really not. I'm really tired.
Okay, just relax now. I'm just gonna put this pillow over your head. Just relax.
Just relax. Relax. Relax.
Ho, 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 ho. This is Santa Claus, and here's my little helper.
Santa Claus, Merry Christmas, Santa.
Merry Christmas, little helper, little Santa's helper.
I go with Santa on Christmas Eve, but now I'm going to tell something about Santa Claus that no one's ever known.
Just one moment, don't say anything you'll regret, little helper, don't say anything you'll regret.
I'm going to say it. Santa Claus is a thief.
Shut your yap.
You go into home, you steal silverware and rings and jewelry and everything.
Shut your little mouth. Don't forget, you're in this thing as deeply as I am, little helper. You've helped me steal. You're over your head in this thing, too.
You never given me my 15%, you promised.
All right, you little brat. Here, take your $5.
Oh, Merry Christmas and thank you, Santa Claus.
Merry Christmas, little helper.
Merry Christmas,
Santa Merry Claus. Christmas
Merry
to
Christmas
all,
Christmas,
to
Merry
all.
Christmas,
Merry Christmas, Christmas,
Santa
Merry,
Santa
Christmas,
Santa
Merry
Santa
Christmas,
Santa
Merry Santa Christmas, Santa Merry Santa Christmas.
We're down here in an art gallery in North Beach, and we're going to discuss a new and interesting aspect of painting. And you run the gallery here.
Yes.
Do you have any particular painting that is quite non-representational that people don't understand here in the gallery?
Well, I think the one that would be considered the least representational is this one up on the wall, because I've had a number of people ask me, what is it?
Can we give you an audio artistic interpretation of the painting and get your reaction to our audio interpretation of it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We do it with sounds.
All right, give us about 8 seconds to look at it, and we'll give you an audio interpretation. Then we'd like your instant reaction to our audio interpretation.
All right.
All right, our 8 seconds will begin now. Now, could we have your reaction to that, you being the artist?
Well, being the fact that it sounds somewhat like the coyotes on the desert, it suggests nature. This particular picture isn't out on the desert, but it would be a locality where you would find coyotes and pack rats and, wild animals in this nature. So you're
you
quite
found...
correct in that.
Do you think we could be, or people like ourselves, could be an asset to a person that owns an art gallery by appearing in their art gallery? When somebody strolls in and looks at the paintings, we or people like ourselves would stand behind them and then make these sounds when they stood in front of a picture.
Yes, I think it's possible.
Could you yourself give an audio-visual evocation of a particular painting here?
Oh, you mean give sound effects?
Could you interpret that picture for us quickly, just with one sound?
Since it's sunset and there are not too many boats around and it's a very soft background, you might hear the gondolier singing. It's something la 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 de 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 la la.
Excuse me, are you looking for a bookstore?
Yeah, I'm looking for one.
Books capture things, don't they?
Well, they do, because you can't buy it. I try to buy it. It's a paperback book.
Cameras capture things, don't they?
Well, they do, yes. People go nuts over it.
Would you yourself be interested in a sense, being a human camera?
In a camera?
Yes.
Well, in what way?
What we're doing, very essentially, is capturing totally one person's experiences over a given period of time. That's the basis of it. And we would do this by installing a camera in your head. That's all.
Yeah, I get you, yeah.
And your eyes would operate as lenses.
Well, I tell you, this book I'm looking for is called it's Mental Dyslexia and so forth like that. I mean, and everybody buys that book. I don't know why.
Could we take you to our station wagon now, make the initial incision, put some film in your head?
Well, I mean, make the initial incision?
Yeah.
You crazy? Well, I mean, you don't just operate on first. You have to have authorization from a doctor.
No. You have assumed that this is an involved operation.
Yeah, I get you now.
We do cut your head.
Right. In other words, you're going to cut my head open?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what we're asking your permission for. We have a release that we'll ask you to sign. That's what we want.
Release?
Yes.
Yeah. We don't operate without a signature. We wouldn't do anything like that.
What'd I get out of it?
You would get the experience of being a human camera. Is that negative?
All?
Yeah.
In other words, you figure that's all, and yet you cut my head open for that?
We've never done this before, and we think it can work. We tried once with a goldfish. What questions do you have in your mind about it?
The question is, I wanted to know where this bookstore was. And here you ended up telling me about this operation in my brains. In other words, back of my head. And here I'm looking for this book.
What exactly are we asking you to let us do?
You're asking me to cut my back of my head open and slip a film in there so I can walk around like a human camera and take pictures, actually, sure.
Wouldn't it be an experience that you would never forget?
I believe it would be.
Then yes. You will do it.
Say, why don't you just tell me where this bookstore is?
Every day we bring a young, fresh talent out onto the street and get reaction of passers-by to his act. Today we have a yodeler here, and we have a young man who's going to audition him. Michael, this is James Coyle. He is a yodeler.
Pleasure to meet you, Michael.
Pleasure to meet you.
Now, Michael, get set. Here's James Coyle, San Francisco's newest, freshest talent, and his yodeling. Go ahead, Mr. Coyle.
Yodel-wee! Yodel-wee! Yodel-wee!
Now, what was your reaction to that, Michael?
I didn't care for it too much.
Why?
Well, I didn't think it was too much talent.
You didn't? What was, there was something grating about his voice?
Can I ask a question, sir?
Yes.
May I ask a question?
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Coyle. Bear in mind, this is just the first person we've stopped. Don't be touchy.
No, I'm not. I have returned now. I would like to ask you, what did you think of my voice?
I've heard yodelers. I'm not a yodeler expert, but I've heard yodelers before, and that didn't seem like yodeling to me.
May I give you one more brief sample of my talent?
Well, if you like, sure.
All right, we'll give you a second chance, Mr. Coyle. This won't happen again. Go ahead.
Yodeling! Yodeling!
Excuse me, you seem to find some humor in this, ma'am?
Yes, I do.
You were just standing here, and did you find his voice pleasing?
I thought it was very funny. Well, who is he?
Would you want him on the radio?
No.
What's wrong, Mal? You seem to be in some kind of pain.
Yeah, this tooth is really killing me. It's been about 4 days now.
Listen, your tooth is bothering you?
Yeah.
Is it at all loose?
I don't know whether it's loose or not. I'm confused about it.
All right, it probably is. Let me yank it out. Listen, I've got a rope here.
Well, wait a minute. You're not a dentist. I mean, I'm going to go to a dentist.
I don't have to be a dentist. I can do it. Let me just attach the rope. Open your mouth now.
Okay,
I'll let you
do it this time.
All
okay.
Right, let me loop it around. It's like molar there.
Yeah, it's just how I have here.
Okay, I've got it in there.
Hey, you got it tied on good.
I have it tied. Well, I want you to hold still.
I see you can do this.
Now,
Just trust me, will you?
All right.
Hold still, and I'm going to yank it.
Okay.
And then you'll feel better.
I just do it quickly, yeah.
Ready? Now make a fist.
All right.
Ready?
Yeah.
Here goes.
Go ahead.
Holy mackerel. I actually yanked off his entire head.
I'm never going to trust you again, Coyle.
A man in a house defrosted two chicken wings and grafted them on the side of his pet mouse, Lawrence.
He grafted the chicken wings onto the side of his pet mouse, Lawrence. He grafted the chicken wings onto the side of his pet mouse, Lawrence.
The man set up a kitchen table next to an open window as a runway for Lawrence so that Lawrence might fly. Lawrence started down the runway, his little feet pumping faster all the time, his defrosted chicken wings flapping. He reached the window, but alas, he could not fly. He plunged to the ground on his little bean.
Poor Lawrence, with his soggy, defrosted, melting chicken wings, couldn't fly. Poor little would-be aviator mouse.
Then the downtrodden mouse snuck back into the house and through a crack in the floor entered the home of his vermin friends of yore.
His vermin friends of yore. Lawrence expected to be rejected by the bourgeois masses of the vermin swarm. But instead, the middle-class elements of the rat, mouse, and termite community gave him a hero's welcome. It became a triumphant return for Lawrence, the first to try mutant flight.
They bowed and scraped before the princely mutant rodent Lawrence. Then the inner wall household pest chorus intoned,
All hail Larry! Egotistical, domestic, defrosted, chicken wing rodent. All hail Prince Lawrence. Egotistical, domestic, defrosted, chicken wing mutant rodent.
The lady walked toward the window. There was indeed alien matter on the window, an accumulation of dust and some type of hardened dirt. She went to the kitchen to get a cleanser and a rag. She returned from the kitchen with rag and cleanser in hand, applied same to the alien matter. Same alien matter resisted the rubbing, the pressure, and the liquid solution to a degree. Boom, boom, boom. Alas, she applied the rag with greater force. The spot was finally removed. She had triumphed over the alien matter on her window.
Would you find it interesting yourself to perhaps go to an area where eagles lurk and observe them?
If I had the time and the things to do it with.
Well, a gentleman has specifically suggested that a small device which has been constructed, which is a one-man airplane, be used. The idea is that the person's body actually acts as a fuselage. The person is dressed in an eagle costume. with huge eagle wings. When he spreads the wings out, the motor of the plane starts, and he appears in the sky as a huge eagle. The idea is that this person will go up to the northwest and try and be placed in an urn, which is an eagle nest, then live with the eagles and observe their habits. Would you yourself be willing to do this?
Even though you dress as a bird, one bird would recognize another bird, even though you dress as one. You might fool them a little bit, but not that much.
Well, let's say you're sitting on the same rock with four other eagles, and you're just perched there, and they look over at you. What would you do to convince them you were really just another eagle sitting on the rock?
Well, I go up and peck at their bill a little bit.
To make friends?
Sure, that's what the birds do. Peck at their beaks or whatever they do. Like my parakeets at home. I got parakeets.
Yeah.
You are fond of birds, then?
Yeah, sure.
You would probably be interested in participating in the human eagle experiment.
Sure, because birds, all they want to do is live. They don't want to bother nobody. Maybe people, but not birds.
If one of the eagles came up to you and he communicated to you somehow through some eagle means of communication that he wanted to take a trip to another mountain, let's say he wanted to go to the Rockies, would you agree to make the trip with the eagle and fly thousands of miles?
I can't try.
No, if you had the eagle costume, you realize you would...
I might try it. Heck yeah. Sure.
Do you think we might be able to understand the eagle better as a result of this type of experimentation?
Sure. How else are you going to find out about the eagle? That's what you got to do. You got to, if you want to, what in Rome do as the Romans do, I say.
And when you go to an eagle nest?
Well, you do as the eagles do.
One day, Jim Coyle and I stopped a sailor on the street. We asked him to help us rob a bank.
He told us that about 2 weeks previous to our meeting him, his aunt had purchased some yarn in a store. Now, between the time she got the yarn in her house and the time she wanted to start her knitting, she had misplaced the yarn.
Would you favor the idea of taking children, taking infants, and putting what amounts to a fungus on their feet? Which fungus will develop and will grow as actually an outer layer on the child and, in a sense, will have a grass-like appearance but will protect the child in future years against the negative aspects of weather?
If I knew for sure that it would be safe, it would cause no harm.
We're looking for somebody today who will essentially volunteer their child for this experiment. Would you at this time, knowing that there will be some medical provisions made, volunteer your child? Right at this moment, on this broadcast.
On this broadcast right now, I'd say no. Because
what
I don't,
are we asking?
I don't, well, I would refuse because I don't think you people are... I don't think that's quite the thing to do at this time. I mean, no doctor would agree with you. They might easily commit you, in fact.
It is for the child's well-being.
Well, I think I'd have to think about it.
You want to help your child.
Oh, no, there's no doubt in my mind I want to help my child, but I have to think about what you're saying.
Bring your child down tonight. Bring your child down tonight. We'll give you the address. We'll make the application.
Right.
Will you bring the child?
I will.
And will you allow us to apply the fungus?
No, I won't say that. I'll bring him.
Can we give you the address and everything?
You can give me the address,
It's
yeah.
in a food market. It's in the rear.
Food market.
It's not in the market itself. It's in the rear of the market in a section.
What is the name of this market? What is the name of the... You are putting me on.
We are.
You are putting me on.
We were the radio station. We really are.
Oh, Grutter.
What did you think? What did you think of us at the proposal?
That you were a bit off.
That you saw that scene in the back of the market?
Yeah, that is too much.
This is Mal Sharp with another in the series Job Opportunities. Every day I bring an employer out onto the street and have him offer a San Franciscan an interesting and novel job. Now I have James P. Coyle with me, our employer of the day, and I've just stopped a young man who we're going to offer a job to.
I am James P. Coyle, and I'm very glad to meet you.
Same here.
The nature of the job is it's a little unusual. Just like anything else, there are certain risks entailed in it. You would be working down in a pit. In which I have created, through scientific endeavor, I have created intense flame. People throw objects in the flaming pit, you go through, you pick them up, they name the object, you pick them up, and I charge them admission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'd be interested. It's something new and exciting, you know, and I like exciting.
The reason I ask, I had an employee before, and I will tell you this directly and honestly, he was a little careless and incautious. I gave him specific instructions.
and he perished. Now, I want you to understand this before we get any further. He did perish.
I understand. Well, mistakes can happen sometimes.
Now, as I understand it, the death index on this job, they give us a death index, is about 98%. In other words, if you took this job, the chance of your actual perishing would be 98% in favor of your perishing.
It's a chance. I like to take chances.
What we're trying to do really is to create a living hell. Have people pay admission. They look down in the pit. They see you down there. The flames are all around you. There will be four maniacs with you, and you've got to control them.
Now, wait a minute. I understand that you said four maniacs?
Yes.
Yeah. And you mean I got to tell them what to do or try to keep them together or something like that?
Yes, exactly. Control them and see that they don't interfere with you, because they will. That's what they're going to try and do.
Uh-huh.
They're fully costumed. They're fully protected, and they're going to be attacking you, and this is part of the attraction.
Oh, I see. It sounds very interesting.
Have you worked with maniacs before?
No, never.
Have you worked with Flame before?
No, not necessarily.
One other aspect, large bats fly through the air. You've seen bats, haven't you? These are very large bats with, I might say, extremely large teeth from the photo I saw. They'll be swooping down over your head. Would the bats at all deter you from doing your job?
No, I don't think so. If I had a job to do, I'd try to do it regardless of the bats or anybody else.
Now, I'll explain the situation to start with. I want to be sure you can handle a job. I am paying $46 a week initially. Is this agreeable?
Sounds okay.
And I am offering not only the $46, but during the 12 hours that you'll be down in the pit every day, I will provide nourishment to you. In other words, I will provide one meal during that 12-hour period. Will that be satisfactory?
Sounds okay.
Have you ever consumed bats?
No, I haven't.
Would you look forward to the idea of actually consuming bats?
Eating one?
Yes.
I guess so.
In other words, your lunch. You go down and open up your little brown paper bag that Mr. Coyle had prepared, and inside there would be a bat, and then you would just prepare it down in the flames.
Oh, I had to cook it myself?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Why?
Oh, no. If you could cook it for me, I wouldn't mind eating it, but, you know.
What?
A bat.
Yeah.
But as long as I didn't see it cooking, you know, I think I could devour it.
Have you ever had any experience with snakes, large snakes?
No.
See, the bats actually, they're foes down in this pit. The reason why the bats are there is because there are snakes in the pit. The bats attack the snakes, and the snakes will be curling around your feet as you're trying to handle the maniacs.
Yeah, I'm not scared of snakes, though.
What?
I'm not scared of snakes.
Are you at all, and be honest, are you at all afraid of the maniacs?
No, not really.
What are you going to do with them if they start attacking you?
Fight them off.
And this is what the people pay for.
Uh-huh.
The people who are looking down in the pit pay to see you surrounded by flames, picking up objects that they throw down to you. You'll be attacked by the maniacs and the bats. The snakes will be crawling at your feet. This, you understand, this is what the people pay for.
Yeah. Well, they pay to see it. Give them their money's worth.
Now, what I'd like to know is that you fully understand the job. Can you, in your own way, recapitulate what I've told you about the job, so that we know that you do have an understanding of it?
Yeah, it seems to me you want me to work in some kind of a pit. As you say, you're trying to develop a living hell. And in this pit, I wear some sort of a uniform, and it'll be a lot of flames. And I have to work with maniacs and watch out for bats flying around. And I'll get one meal a day. I'll be in there for 12 hours, and I'll have to eat a bat.
And you will take the position.
Yeah, I'd like to try it.
Wow. Guys, great work.
Yeah, some of those people out there slipped on a banana peel.
Yuck, 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 yuck.
That was some USDA Prime talking, if you ask me.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, as someone who does most of their professionalized talking in a duo formation, it's nice to see people, elders, you know, in the field of sort of a team duo bullshitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's you know? Rare these days to see someone take the subject position of knucklehead as seriously as we do.
Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah, and just not easy. Playing it real straight.
It's not easy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's also funny how the sort of radio persona has changed over time. Like in the early 60s, there was, I think people were much more inclined to view these people authoritatively, right? Like the microphone and the sort of position of the interview was automatically something that people took more seriously. And then perhaps because of the work of people like our guests, Coyle and Sharp, now people look at people like us and we have to adopt the sort of sniveling post Ira Glass persona, right, on the radio. Like we have to be these sniveling, like the sort of quote unquote neutral radio persona is like a sniveling nebbish who sort of grovels before reality in confusion, you know. And so it's interesting to see this sort of like lordly tone being taken where people are like, I'm an employer. And like immediately people are like, oh, OK.
Yeah. I mean, you're yes, right. The microphone must have held a great deal of authority then, because I can't. I mean, one of the reasons that we've been, vanquished to the bowels of K-Chung Studios, because if we walked around with microphones, even in Venice or something, no one would talk to us that long.
No, no.
Yeah, which is in part because no one takes microphones seriously, but I think also because now, I mean, at that time, people weren't as aware that by getting involved in recorded media, you could get spread everywhere. Like what you said could go absolutely everywhere. And today, if someone said something that compromised them, we could spread it everywhere within an hour.
You know, well, you think that, but then at the same time, I think, because people would say like, oh, hey, I'm from the radio. And they'd be like, oh, everyone I know will hear this because I'll be on the radio.
True.
You know, and everyone listens to the radio.
Yeah.
Whereas at this point now, like, you know, you could be famous in one corner of the internet and absolutely, you know, like you're the number one. Japanese furry fursuit celebrity on the internet. But like, you know, even in like the Czech furry community, people are like, who's that?
Yeah.
You know? And then meanwhile, you know, over here in the fine arts community, we're like, ah, did you know that they were furries or something like that? And it's like, you know, it's absolutely barking. You know, so I feel like on the one hand it's true, and on the other hand it's false. Like some things can come across really fast, but I have a hard time thinking that everything works the same way. You know, it's like true. If I'm on NPR, I don't think anyone. If I got interviewed as a man on the street in MacArthur Park or something like that just now. You know, I don't think, or like, you know, we step outside the studio and they're like, here we are at 1 a.m. in Chinatown.
Right.
What do you guys think about, you know, yada, yada, yada. We'd be like,
would you put this fungus on your baby?
Would you like a job that now seems like a normal position?
I love how the worst labor conditions they could imagine in the 60s is just like a basic job today.
Yeah. It's like you
welcome
are tortured
to Vernon,
in flames.
California.
Yeah, you are tortured in flames by maniacs. You're like, all right, I will work at the dog food plant in Vernon.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, absolutely. Well, you will work for 12 hours. Yeah, exactly. That's fine.
The battery plant will explode while you are there.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, you will get to... You get lunch? You get to eat a bat? I like how the interviewee... argued for his own, like negotiated a labor condition where he was like, I will not cook the bat.
Yeah, like all this sounds great. I'm not cooking the bat myself. That is absurd.
You're gonna have to cook the bat. And they're like, all right, we'll cook the bat.
Yeah, all right. We got this guy's playing hardball over here.
We'll pay you $42 a week. I do you have any idea how much $42 a week was at that time? You know, was that like the price of a Ford or something like that?
Well,
you know?
With inflation, that is $42 million a week. That's how those sentences always go, right? It's never like, with inflation, it's still a peccayune sum. No.
But I wonder, you know, because it is like,
It sounded unreasonable at the time, you know, listening to it tonight, but who knows? Who knows? And where was that recorded? For some reason, I imagined it was
San Francisco.
Yeah, okay. They did mention that because it, it did feel like San Francisco.
It really felt like the San Francisco of like Shel Silverstein books or something like that too. You know, like it felt like a really having just visited San Francisco, I feel like it is like a really different San Francisco than the one we have now. But anyway.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I first went when I was 16, and there was a bit more street side banter to that city than Los Angeles. Could get into it with people.
Yeah.
Could ask questions.
You really can't do that here. I mean, you're generally not seeing anyone on the street unless you are in like, oh, here we are, we're MacArthur Park. You know, something like that. That's the only time when you'll actually encounter other humans walking around.
The only times I've seen those kind of things, I mean, mostly they're video now, but take place in LA. It's always the boardwalk in Venice or Santa Monica. I guess a lot of foot traffic.
Yeah. Reliably, there's people there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember vividly there was.
Yeah, I mean, you could imagine people trying to do streeters. Yeah, sorry, go for it.
Oh, there was one where, you know, the bit was that they had this, you know, like a foam core map of the entire planet with all the countries, you know, in different colors with the country name.
Oh, yeah.
And Australia was labeled Iraq. And he was just going up to people asking, you know, because we were involved, still to some degree, involved in a conflict in Iraq. Can you point to the country of Iraq? You know, and most people search around for a long time and then, there it is, point to Australia.
Ha, ha, ha.
I mislabeled something and I tricked you.
I thought that was an unlabeled map and people just pointed at Australia.
No, it said Iraq on Australia.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like a John Stewart thing, right?
Yeah. I think that sounds right. That sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah, I feel like lots of the setups we see now are so transparent in the, you know, it doesn't require a lot of improvising on behalf of the person doing the setup. It's just like a really straightforward, like,
right.
I ask you a question, you say something, and then we both look at the camera. And the framing and editing back at the studio will make it apparent that like X or Y is truly the case.
It is right? True. Yeah.
Like, and then we just look at the camera and oops, you're a moron, you know, like, ha, 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 ha. But yeah, no, I think it's like fun to have, a situation where I guess there's not that much. There's always 2-1 with Coyle and Sharp. So I feel like, it would be interesting to see, you know, this isn't how the talking show works, so we won't be doing this, but it would be interesting to see like how they would take on like another pair of people doing bullshit.
Oh yeah. I mean, I hope we're walking down the street after the studio, after a session, Steve, and we run into them and they try to put up.
Yeah.
Put us on.
Yeah. I would love to a tango.
Yeah.
I would love to see how it goes, to see who could, weave the weirdest tail.
Right.
Right.
We'd waggle their chins right off their little faces.
I also do think it's amazing to be like, yeah, you will bring the child, but no, I will not necessarily be putting the fungus on them.
Well, I mean, it was touching how the, I mean, the people really engaged. Like they took,
yeah.
I think now there's so much more suspicion kind of generally in society that people wouldn't be as open, but like, you know, she was halfway there to checking out the fungus thing. You know, I was like, it doesn't sound right, but why would you be, but why would you not have my best interest in mind? Like that seemed to be the tone of so many people. It's like, this doesn't sound right to me, but why would you do something mean?
Yeah. Why would that be a thing you would want to do?
Yeah. Why would anyone do that on purpose?
Seems absolutely baffling to me in this current moment.
Yeah, as I sign my contract at the battery factory in Vernon. I'm not cooking the bat myself.
The union has won a huge victory from Amazon. The bats will now not be cooked by the employees on the line. Yeah. When you go to the Amazon oven in Redlands to like be baked alive without air conditioning while peeing in bottles, you will no longer have to cook your own bat.
All thanks to Toadette. fighting for the workers.
Oh boy, I can't wait to hear her on Democracy Now when Amy has Toadette on. Anyway, well, it's been lovely. What a fun time. Mal, Jim, it's been great to have you guys. Always a pleasure to enjoy fine put on artists. Which is also such an innocent term, you know, like,
are you putting when's the me last on? Time you
yeah, have you ever gotten put on lately? I've gotten like bullshitted. I haven't gotten put on.
Yeah. That wouldn't be the term people would use today when they catch you in the act.
No.
You put me on. I'm going to start saying that, though.
It's tempting. Yeah. Instead of saying, are you fucking with me?
Yeah.
Which is what I always say at the end of the day. Yeah. Are you fucking with me?
Are you putting me on?
Yeah. Because like they aren't fucking with me, really. No. Yeah, it's more accurate.
Just putting you on, Steve.
I'm getting put on.
Mm-hmm.
What are they putting on? Anyway, we'll resume this next week. Good night, everyone.
Good morning, Chinatown.